Susie Speer. I'm a doctoral student in public health at UCLA. And I also work at UCLA Integrated Substance Abuse Programs, which is a drug abuse research center. And for about 5 years, I ran a screening and brief intervention program in our mental health center on campus. And that was an SAMHSA-funded project. And what I want to talk about today is sort of stepping back. We're always promoting screening and brief intervention in primary care because we always say, well, everybody goes to the doctor at least once a year, so this is a logical venue for screening and brief intervention. And so, but I always was wondering whether, you know, the people that are really at risk, like heavy drinkers and, you know, drug users, if they actually go to the doctor. And so wanting to know what our potential reach is for this population. So that's the question I'm going to address. Oh, and I have no relationships to disclose. So we're all aware of the harmful effects of alcohol. Alcoholics comprise only 5% of the population. A much larger fraction are risky drinkers, so people engaging in binge drinking, drinking under the influence. And at a population level, a lot more harm is caused by people that are just risky drinkers. So this is our target group for screening and brief intervention, with the idea that if we intervene early, we can prevent people from escalating into addiction, and then we can also refer people to specialty treatment if they are, you know, potentially dependent. So screening and brief intervention has really become a huge priority for our country. SAMHSA has done a lot of work. NIDA is now very interested in studying it. There's been a lot of work, research on alcohol, so we have a lot of evidence that it reduces harmful alcohol use, and now growing literature on illicit drugs. Screening in primary care is also one of the priorities for the White House drug control strategy. And now, especially with healthcare reform, primary care is expected to take even larger role in linking people to care. Some patient samples have shown that there is 20 to 50% prevalence of substance use in primary care. Certainly in the ER, you see a lot, like we've already heard about. And like I said, there's a lot of evidence for the impact on alcohol use. So we don't, you know, unfortunately we haven't, we don't have the routine screening in primary care like we'd like. Access could be one of the barriers, and this is something that's not really questioned. It's sort of just a given that everyone goes to the doctor and everyone goes to primary care. But certainly a lot of people don't have insurance, and transportation could be an issue. There could be cultural barriers. I've heard several talks at this conference about lack of trust, discrimination, segregation. All of these can be barriers to people getting this screening and brief intervention. Also, providers do not have a lot of time to do this. In primary care, it's been particularly difficult to get to have the uptake of screening and brief intervention. So, but what I'm focusing on is the access issue. So what I chose to use, I basically analyzed survey data for the state of California, and I used this Anderson behavioral model to identify predictors of service utilization for the whole population, and then to see if heavy drinking was a factor. And so Anderson's model says that there's predisposing factors, which are your demographics, enabling factors, which access, health insurance, and then also immediate needs, so your medical conditions would also play a role. And then your personal health practices, such as heavy drinking and smoking, can also be important factors. So I did a secondary analysis of the California Health Interview Survey, which is known locally as the CHIS, and it's a public use file. It's a great survey. It covers a lot of different health topics, and it is representative of the whole population in California. The downside is it doesn't go into depth on drinking, and for the adults, it doesn't get into illicit drugs. So the data are weighted, and I analyze the weighted data. So I wanted to see the characteristics of heavy drinkers in comparison to non-drinkers and then people in between, so I'll show you some of that. And then I did multivariable logistic regression to identify predictors. I wanted to look at two settings that I could look at in this data. Doctor's visit in the past 12 months, which is basically your primary care visit, and then ER visit. And then I tested all of the variables in one model. This is a little bit about the CHIS. It is population-based random digit dial telephone survey. It's conducted every 2 years since 2001, and the data can be accessed on the website, a very user-friendly website for getting health information for your for the geographic area, like a county. It has a very complex sampling design. First, it deals with geography and representation of all the different counties, and then households are sampled, and then individuals within a household. So 51,408 is a sample. Response rate is 21%, which is in the range of, you know, what's expected for telephone surveys. It's about 35 minutes long, and it's been translated into multiple languages, so it's a very high quality survey. I define drinking status. A heavy drinker is people that did binge drinking monthly or weekly or more in the past year. And then moderate drinkers are people that occasionally might have done binge drinking once a few times. And then abstainers are no alcohol. So you can see that heavy drinkers comprise 11% of the population, moderate drinkers 58%. There's a relationship between age and heavy drinking, so younger, 36.7 is the mean. Men are more likely to report heavy drinking, 70% white, and you can see how it kind of compares with the abstainers. 57% have more than a high school education, a little more than half are married. The heavy drinkers are less likely to be at the poverty level. They have a high rate of employment, 76.9% are employed, and 78% reported having any health insurance, private or public. So right there we can see that you know, maybe access doesn't look like it would be a barrier. Okay, so this is the logistic regression, so I'm reporting odds ratios. And this is, these are predictors of a doctor's visit in the past year. And this first table has all the demographic predictors. And so what I found was that if you're you know, female, married, over the median of 44, and have some college, you have a higher odds of going to seek medical care, go to the doctor in the past year. Employed, people that are employed have lower odds, 87. Also, Asian report less, so in comparison to white, they have a lower odds, 66. And then also poverty, people at the poverty level. And then the next table are the variables that are in the relate to access and need. And insurance is by far the most significant predictor. So the odds ratio is 3.07. Having a car for personal use wasn't a predictor. And you can see having a medical condition or having psychological distress, asthma, diabetes, high blood pressure, are all those people all have a higher odds of going to the doctor. Smokers have a lower odds. And drinking, didn't seem to make a difference, your level of drinking. And I also looked at interactions between drinking and gender and age, and just found one interaction that was significant for moderate drinker and female as compared to male non-drinker. Okay, so I'm looking at the same predictors for ER visits, and the one predictor that stands out is African American versus white. They have a higher odds, 48% higher odds of going into the ER for their health. And married people have a lower odds. and in terms of their access and need. I thought maybe number of doctors visit in the past year would be inversely related to ER, but it's not. It's people that do go to the doctor also report going to the ER for their health. And also psychological distress has a higher odds, asthma, and being a smoker gives you a higher odds, 34% higher odds of seeking care in an ER setting. Heavy drinking status didn't make statistical significance. So there's really, we can assume that there's no, the difference in the odds are, there is no difference to whether you're a heavy drinker or not. And I ran the same interactions, and here the moderate drinker and age was significant. So in terms of what is the potential to reach heavy drinkers in medical settings, most heavy drinkers do visit the doctor. The odds of visiting the doctor or the ER are not different for heavy drinkers compared with non-drinkers. So that does provide a rationale for implementing screening and brief intervention. But the data do underline the importance of access. So certainly having insurance is a major predictor of whether you're going to seek care. So hopefully with healthcare reform, we'll see people getting more access and hopefully more access to important interventions. There's some populations that seem to have less access to services, certainly males, younger populations, and people that are employed have a much lower odds of going to the doctor. So it looks like we need to encourage more people to seek care. I think there might be a potential for more worksite interventions as an alternative venue to primary care. And for people that are employed, the odds of heavy drinking increased by 42%. So these employed people are at risk, however, they're not seeking care to the extent that we would like. So potentially worksite screening and brief intervention. And as probably a lot of you know, the employee assistance programs are geared for that kind of thing. And I think there are some efforts underway to do screening and brief intervention. So limitations. The public use file didn't have a lot of detailed information on alcohol behavior. I wanted to look at different kinds of settings to see if there were some settings that were better venues than others for intercepting heavy drinkers. And one of the settings I think is very interesting is mental health. But in the public use file, I didn't have that data. That's something to look at in the future. And yeah, I wasn't able to apply to get the confidential file. So future research could examine the mental health setting, mental health services utilization. And in Northern California, Constance Wisner and her colleague have done such a study, a small study, and found that heavy drinkers were more likely to receive a medical visit, but that they were more likely to have their drinking assessed in mental health. So mental health seems like a place where you know, the clinicians might be more amenable to doing the brief counseling. And then future research could look at the employee assistance programs and the implementation of screening and brief intervention. And for the past 3 years, I've been supported on a NIDA T32 grant, so I'd like to acknowledge that, and my mentor, Dr. Richard Rawson at UCLA Integrated Substance Abuse Programs. Thank you very much.
I have a question. What percentage of people in adults in California would be asked about their alcohol once a year by their doctor?
I don't know. I haven't really seen any studies like that. You know, the research shows that you know, there's not primary care physicians or providers are not routinely screening. So there is a big gap. Would you say, we have some colleagues that are more familiar. Janice, do you have any?
I don't know if I'm as familiar with go to my doctor year after year, I would not be asked about alcohol.
I don't think a lot do unless there's a different program in place. I have, in my own experience, seen some ask it but not do anything about the answer.
Yeah, I think it might be common to include on the paperwork, the cage, something like that, but it's less frequent for the physician to then start a conversation about it, and because a lot of them don't know really what to do with that positive score.
Right.
So there's still so much that needs to be done, but...
I always thought an interesting study would be to have figure out what the threshold is, how drunk would I have to show up before the doctor would ask.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Sounds good.
Yeah.